future of local public radio. In December, KPFT is asking you for a tax-deductible donation at kpft.org. You'll keep the station on the air now and help us finish out the year strong. Give for the great programming you enjoy. You can help today, right now, at kpft.org. Listener members are also asked this month to cast their votes on our board election. You'll hear a variety of candidate promises and statements. Please listen carefully and make an informed vote. Your choices will determine the future of KPFT and the radio programming you know and love. Eligible voters should have received ballots before now, and if you haven't, visit kpft.org for election information as well as your link to year-end giving. Again, that's kpft.org. Thank you for this listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica radio station, KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Welcome to the last show of Technology Bites.
That was perfect, whatever it was. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Afflicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Lee is out tonight. The end of the year has caused him to do something.
He must reflect.
He's writing down all of his New Year's resolutions. All the things he won't be doing this year.
But he did leave us a part of a map that shows where he is in a soccer ball shaped robot.
Oh, Star Wars. Alright, well, welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. It is the final show of the year.
Oh, I forgot to say of the year.
Oh, we're doing more?
You have more things you would like to say, Flicted?
I thought Flicted called it to the show. I thought this was the final show, but apparently not.
Is this the last one?
No. Sure, why not?
No. Rumor.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
We'll be back in January. Oh, man, you know, speaking of which, there's no Geek Gathering this Friday because we're not going to do it. We're going to do it next weekend. So that reminds me I need to put up the ad.
January 1st, no Geek Gathering.
That's right. We figure everybody's going to probably be recovering from whatever it is that they're doing.
Playing video games.
Yeah, I got my Fallout 4 going.
Did anyone take down any video game networks over the break?
Yeah.
Did it actually happen? I checked out. I didn't know what happened.
Did it happen? Lizard Squad, or who came out? Whoever it was, the new kids on the block.
Stream
took down Stream.
Wahlberg.
The lizards.
The lizards. So did Microsoft stay up, or did PS? Did the Sony stay up, or did both go down?
I don't know. Because
you got an Xbox.
But I didn't get it on Christmas Day. I got it on Christmas, the day after Christmas, and everything worked fine. But
on Christmas Day, I do know that the Sony PlayStation Network creating new accounts was not working, which that one may just be that there were a ton of people doing it at the same time, so it may not have been a DDoS.
But Stream was hacked. There was all over the Twitters.
It was DDoSed or it was hacked?
Apparently they made it where if you logged into your account, you could see other people's account information. So it was hacked.
That's a feature.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, apparently when you'd log in, it was – what I read somewhere was that it was caching. It was using caching to keep up with the load, except that it wasn't being particularly careful about whose data it was showing you when
it
presented
your account.
Well, I say
there's an article that says Steam wasn't hacked. Caching issue now resolved. Steam was back online, and Valve explains that the service suffered an internal caching error that revealed some confidential data but wasn't actually hacked.
So I guess the new kids on the block didn't bring Hacky back.
they didn't set up their varnish correctly.
Well, so it was a good Christmas for most everyone, except for people that were scared away from Steam. All right, well, you can visit us online at geekradio.com. That's the website. We also hang out on the IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel Tech Bytes, if you want to play the IRC game.
Do any of y'all have a PS3?
No.
I had a PS1, and I just stopped.
I have a PS3 but that was given to us by somebody else, but evidently it's a PS3 compact or something. And it has a very, very small internal hard drive. So I have to replace the hard drive on it, evidently. I was wondering. I can Google search it, but I thought if any of y'all had one and had done it, I was wondering how difficult it is.
It's easy. It's a few minutes kind of job.
Awesome.
If it was like the Xbox, it would just be snap on.
You know, I think there's some place where there's a faceplate or something you take off and then get at it and swap out the drive.
Yeah, it's real simple. It looks like
once you put it in, it'll reload whatever the stuff is and all that automatically.
So it has everything that's on the internal hard drive now also in memory or something? Or do you have to actually take it out and then clone the disk to the new disk and then put the new disk in?
Oh man, let's see. It's been years, so because I had one where it failed, and so we tried to replace the drive, and I think there was another problem, kind of the PS3 equivalent of the red circle of death for Xbox,
red ring of death.
Yeah, I don't think you've got to do anything because I think that the firmware for everything is stored on chip, and then the hard drive is mostly just game storage and other storage. So if something's missing, it knows enough to go out and download the main build package from Sony and then get you going from there.
Okay. Because somebody tried to buy a game and they couldn't even load the game onto the hard drive, which I don't know what size hard drive it is, but it sounded like it was like very small hard drive evidently.
It looks like they ship with 500 meg hard drives, some of these on the smaller
500
side.
500 meg?
I'm sorry, 500 gig.
Okay.
That is small.
Like the
20 meg.
PS3 compact?
No, PS3 is pretty old, so it may not have been.
Yeah, I'm thinking it may be like 10, not even gig. Like
yeah, I might have not read that right.
Like 500 meg.
It might be 500 meg. Some of the small ones ship with, it looks like, I'm not reading this incorrectly, some of them, very few ship with the 500 meg drive. Okay, wow.
Which is 2.5-inch laptop drive.
Yeah, and that's what they said. Any 5400 or 7200 RPM 2.5-inch SATA drive should work.
PlayStation 3 500 gigabyte system.
Gig, so which is it? Gig sounds really large for a PS3, though, because that's half a terabyte.
PlayStation 3 Slim 500 gig console, eBay. So I'm not seeing any 500 megs. I can't imagine because...
I'll have to look at it.
Because the PS3 came out about the same time as the Xbox 360.
If it was 500 gig, you should definitely be able to put some games on that.
Yeah.
It's like you just snap it in.
Yeah, I'm doing a quick search on it, on the hard drive replacement. There's plenty of, basically there's like YouTube videos and all that, but it's like, you know, turn it over on its back, remove the small access door, and then remove the blue Phillips screw hidden under the access door. And it says on one of them, it says that the person decided it was time to upgrade their 120 gig hard drive that was in there.
Looks like okay. There are two models. There was a 12 gig and a 500 gig.
12 gig?
Yes, CCH4000A was one of the models, and there was the 4000B, which had the 500 gigs. But it looks like there was one model with a 12 gig hard drive in there. Maybe that's it.
Maybe.
It's old enough.
When they said how big the hard drive was, it sounded very small.
I wonder if it'll take a solid state drive.
I wonder if it would appreciate one.
It's a SATA interface, but I don't think it back in
SATA. A notebook 2.5-inch SATA drive. I would think, you know, obviously you're spending more. It costs a lot more for the replacement drive, relatively speaking. But nowadays, you know, to put in 120 gig one would be what, like $60? A 256 would be $100. You just wonder how would it be fast enough? Because I would think that to the machine itself, it doesn't look any different.
Well, yeah, we're not going to solve this PS3 problem here.
Yeah. Let's wait. Hey, run home. Bring it back up here. And we'll just sit by. We'll
do it live on the air. We'll do it live.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, we're trying to take calls from people who have PS1 questions tonight, not...
That
have, if, obsolete technology.
That have wired
know why I don't answer the phone.
That have wired an external 5.25 floppy drive.
I modded mine pretty heavily. That was back when you could get like the mod chips to where not that I would. I heard that you could take a PS1 and add certain mod chips you would buy from Japan, and then they would play burned games and burned CDRs and play whatever you put in there, which was a lot of fun.
There are, if you Google it, there are instructions or there's stuff talking about the difference between using a solid-state drive. But it doesn't sound like, there's basically arguments back and forth about whether it speeds
bang,
it up.
Bang for the buck.
Yeah. So there's that. But so, Jay, have you killed a lot of people yet in Fallout 4?
I was reading that article about the guy who beat Fallout 4 without killing anyone.
I read that too.
And that just...
It sounded horrible.
It doesn't sound like a fun way to play the game.
I'm surprised this recently that there's somebody that's gotten to that, because I could see where after you play through it a bunch where you go, well, is it possible? And then you can get those kind of people who are so into a game that they want to see if it can be done. But
it sounded like this guy... That was his way of playing the previous Fallouts. And so that's what he wanted to do with this one. And so when it looked like it wasn't possible, he was like, no, I'm going to do it.
Well, and then some executive said, yeah, you're not supposed to be able to get through this without killing somebody.
We really didn't design it that way. Like, you pretty much have to kill people.
And frankly, people still die. You have to convince other people to kill the people who are supposed to die to make it work. The other thing that was interesting in that article, I believe they talked about some of the stuff that this guy found out by playing the game so odd, or maybe it was in the comments, but the weird connections between certain characters where there was somewhere where if you killed, there's two like weapons dealers, and if you killed the guy's friend, the one of the two weapons dealers, the other one would just like take off and be out on the map, but his he was unkillable. So they were connected. Basically, that you weren't supposed to have killed the partner or whatever, and so if you did, then this guy would like leave and then be out in the middle of nowhere somewhere. But he was unkillable, and if he ran into somebody and they fought with him, then he couldn't do a lot of damage, but he couldn't die. And so apparently it would just take forever, but then eventually whoever attacked this guy would die. Even, you know, the non-player character stuff that when they interacted on their own. But, you know, so it's interesting to see the kind of odd connections or the odd the things that the game expects and what happens when it doesn't get them.
I remember one thing they mentioned was at one point he was doing something to try to basically get through a step where somebody had to die, and he was getting the henchmen using charisma or something to get the henchmen to attack each other and then attack the other guy, and it wasn't really supposed to work that way, and it kind of flipped out the AI in the game where all of them had kind of died, and then all of a sudden this new person just popped up that hadn't been there before and attacked him.
Yeah, the Wasteland Whisperer perk, and I think, yeah, he was just kind of breaking the game because a lot of those things, I don't think that they accounted or tested for certain variables at certain parts of the game.
Well, I did figure out that the dog, you know, I got the dog as my travel companion, and Cynthia hates the name. The dog is...
Did you name the dog, or does the dog come with
it? The dog comes with a name, and you can't... I don't think you can change. I haven't
Spoiler
found,
alert. What's the dog's name?
Dog Meat.
Oh. Yeah, I can see how Cynthia wouldn't like that.
She doesn't like that name for the dog. I keep joking that I'm getting the dog killed. But I did find out, you know, they can have the dog search things and retrieve things. Like, you know, if you're in a room and you think something's good in there, but you can't find it.
Can you give everyone just like a, what's the 10-second, 20-second view of Fallout? Your post-nuclear war
dystopian. Okay,
so
you basically you've been suckered into buying a share into the...
Suckered into buying an Xbox 360. An Xbox One.
into buying space in the vault in case the nuclear holocaust comes or the nuclear war comes. And sure enough, this guy, your character has space for himself, his wife, and the baby to go into the vault. And sure enough, nuclear war occurs, and rush to the vault and go in there. It turns out that it's not really like live underground for a couple of months and come back. It's like we're going to cryogenically freeze you and experiment on you. And things go awry, and you wake up like 200 or 300 years later.
Oh, wow.
And you come up out of there. And so this post-apocalyptic society is formed, and you have to find your place in there. And the dog, there's this... Right off the bat in the game, there's a high value weapon in a locked case which you do not have the skills to pick. I mean, it's just you can't pick locks that are of a certain level until you get the perk to pick those kind of locks. So I found out that if you tell the dog to search the room, he'll pick the lock and get the thing.
What?
Yeah. He doesn't actually pick the lock, but you know, you go, hey boy, you know, can you find something in here? Sure enough, he goes in the room, comes back and drops the weapon at your feet. It's like it's out of the case.
So this is like dogs that have been, you know, mutated.
Dog
by
Meat must be.
I think it's a glitch in the game.
It's his hacker handle. I think it's his handle. He's been to DEFCON. He can pick locks.
I do like the lock picking feature though. That's kind of fun, and the hacking feature.
Jimmy in the Well got boring. You know, he had to do something. Lock sport was the next logical step.
But it's, you know, I've got about 10 hours invested right now. It does keep track.
Now, do you have to organize closets and drawers as much as you did in Skyrim?
Yes.
You do, because that's really why I like that game, was just the organizational aspect. Not actually doing the play, just going in and moving stuff from, you know, like, oh, this would go better in this chest. Oh, wait, this chest is full.
I don't know if anything fills up or not. I haven't encountered that yet, but boy, it is the dumpster diving game. I mean, you have... And everything's useful. Everything can be, like, transformed into something
else.
So
it really is inventory management kind of a thing?
I haven't
kind of joking. But.
I haven't gotten to where I'm worried about that part so much. I am collecting stuff that I think can be broken down into components for other stuff. In Skyrim, I didn't really learn how to do a lot of that stuff. I just, you know, basically found stuff or killed people or things to get stuff.
Another broom. Wow.
there's a great video on Skyrim hoarding.
Really? I'm even one of those. I'm afraid to look at that video. I was like, I threw nothing away. Just
that guy's got
nothing.
But in this one, you have to, you know, it's beyond that. You have to, like, you can go in and build up your town and get electrical power, get water, get food, things like that.
Okay.
But... Right now, I'm just running around. I was really enjoying just having the baton and killing things by whacking them to death. It's very Skyrim, I guess.
So you're not going the no-kill route?
No, not at all. Okay. Why would you do that? I got this completely kill.
It's already
everything.
Been done.
Yeah, really.
So,
on, Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so when is UnDrive over?
Tomorrow. Okay. Or probably tomorrow.
So
UnDrive, yes. Ticking. Thanks for bringing that up. Lee's not here to do it.
We're
for
about 51%, I think, is what the email
station
today,
it looks like. About station is only around 51%, so, you know, it's falling a bit short of the overall station call. We do have, somebody to thank. I do have to make sure that somebody did go online and made an unpledge for us. Janet, who's in Houston, Texas, she says, keep having fun. So thank you, Janet.
Damn awesome. Janet.
And the radio station is in the middle. Well, not in the middle. It's toward the end of our UnDrive, where we're just kind of quietly asking our listeners to give something to the radio station, a little end-of-the-year thank you financial gift, so that we can continue to pay the bills and make ends meet. And we're falling a little bit short, but tonight's your opportunity. If you're listening to Technology Bytes, if you're out there in KPFT listener land, and you're thinking that, you know,
make up that 49% shortfall.
If you're feeling a little bit of the Christmas cheer, a little Christmas spirit, you know.
A little frisky.
Or if you need that last little tax deduction for the end of the year.
You can go to kpft.org and make a donation. And we'd appreciate it.
And for us especially, for our listenership being more sort of tech savvy in that, you know, we're hoping that this can show maybe a way where there's more fundraising for us happens online like this instead, you know, and quietly with a couple of, a couple of breaks where we talk about it, as opposed to having to do the kind of full on pledge drive stuff all the time. So, you know, if you can help us show that's successful, then maybe we can help. We can move some of that, move some more things online for the year to come.
We'd really like to find a way to make fundraising, you know, less horrible. except for Ernesto, nobody really likes it. You know, it's a necessary evil that we have to do in order to raise money to keep the radio station on the air, because it takes real money.
Keep it commercial free.
Not post-war dollars from Fallout 4 to keep it going.
But it must be said that it is, our pledge stuff is less annoying than pop-up video advertising. So there's that, you know. So we're not as bad as the online world on that piece, but...
So anyway, UnDrive, and we'll be talking about that a little bit more later on, because obligations, and because it's important.
Yeah.
All right, so final show of the year. Let's do the final info shot of the year. Take it away, info shot.
This will be a year-end review news.
Yeah, I'm going to review all the technology news of the entire year. It's my top 500 stories.
Take it away, InfoShot.
It's the Technology Bytes InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Yeah, no, I looked around at the articles that had the, like, you know, year in review kind of thing, and, you know, maybe in the past there have been years where there were big things happened that were worth sort of reviewing formally, where you could find an article about it and all that, but I didn't find anything that was worth a darn, so you get a regular info shot, so you can pretend that you can have that last bit of normalcy before New Year's Eve tomorrow night, before you watch Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve. I don't know if they still leave his name in it, because he doesn't do it anymore, obviously. In the your public data protected and kept safely on the internet, a publicly available database containing the personal information of 191 million U.S. voters has been sitting exposed in a publicly accessible corner of the internet, according to security researchers. Does that make you feel comfortable? The deal is, it's a database which was first uncovered by independent security researcher Chris Vickery and reported by databreaches.net, includes the names, home and email addresses, voter IDs, dates of birth, party affiliations, and voting histories of millions of American registered voters since 2000. Fortunately, it does not expose Social Security numbers, driver's license numbers, or sensitive financial information. And And the fact that there's 191 million of them sounds pretty alarming, but it is worth noting that voter registration lists are usually a matter of public record. Although, you know, most of the time, a lot of places, some states, they, you know, charge fees to access the data. And like South Dakota explicitly requires those looking to acquire voter data to sign a statement confirming their understanding that the database may not be used or sold for any commercial purpose and may not be placed for unrestricted access on the internet. What it appears is that, you know, there's a whole industry that that hawks this data, that, you know, goes out and gets it, does the work to get it and put it all together, and then sells it to entities that want to use the data set. It sounds like that's the suspected source of the breach in this case, is a third-party vendor. The style and formatting of the data set point to a vendor called Nation Builder. The company, for its part, says that the IP address where the files were posted did not belong to it or any of its clients. What researchers say is that the poor configuration of the data set could be an indicator that a customer purchased information, then sloppily threw it online without the right security protocols in place. There's a treat, treat for you. Just, the thing is, it's a matter of, it's not that hard. You know, obviously that database is not tiny. 191 million records is not going to be a small file size, but it's very easy to, you know, that fits on a machine. It fits on just about any server that has a hard drive that's worth a darn, that data should fit. And so, you know, this is one of those where it's just somebody's ignorance has made this data kind of available where, you know, where people could grab it and use it for whatever purposes they want to. You know, if they, when you've got all that info, home and email addresses and names and that kind of stuff, date of birth, that does start getting you towards where you have a lot of the pieces of the puzzle to pretend to be somebody or to answer some of the questions to reset a password and get access to stuff. So it's worth paying some attention to some of this on why it's out there and what's going on. And I guess kudos to databreaches.net and the people who found this and who brought it to people's attention so something can be done about it. And then in science news, there's a study that says that about 94% of cars will still be powered by fossil fuels in 2040. I saw that headline, and you read that, and you know, you think, you know, in this coming year, there's a lot of new electric vehicles coming, like the Chevy Bolt is coming. That's a 200-mile electric car. The Tesla Model 3, which will be a close to the average price, you know, a lot closer to the average price of a car electric coming from Tesla. If you thought that those were going to lead to the demise of gas burning cars, think again. According to, here's who ran the study, so then you can have justifiable skepticism. According to the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, known as OPEC, 94% of the global car fleet will still run on fossil fuels in 2040. In its annual World Oil Outlook, it estimates that EVs will represent a mere 1% of the global car market in 2040. Hybrids, however, which the organization considers mostly gas-powered due to their onboard gas-burning engines, will command 14% of the world market by the same date, is what they think. The study says, without a technology breakthrough, battery electric vehicles are not expected to gain significant market share in the foreseeable future. It also estimates hydrogen and natural gas-powered cars will also fail to make a significant impact on oil consumption because of the high cost and lack of fueling infrastructure. OPEC does concede that hybrid sales will increase and cars will become more efficient, but it says that oil demand will continue to grow over the next 25 years due to burgeoning mobility markets like China and India. Their predictions here should be taken with a lot of grains of salt, because OPEC obviously has a stake in increased oil consumption, and it's going to be very against electric cars, bias wise. You know, the their estimate seems very short-sighted because electric vehicles could play a far bigger role in modern transportation than you might expect. Mary Nichols, head of the California Air Resources Board, would like to mandate that all new cars sold in California by 2030 be zero emissions vehicles, according to a Bloomberg report. Although that's just a dream right now, it could become a reality. If that were a law, global car makers would have to adjust in a big way. You know, if they have to rethink their product portfolio for California, it'll affect other markets, you know, especially other U.S. market as a whole, which is the second largest car market on the planet. So it means if California were electronic vehicle or electric vehicle only, most of the world would become could become that way too. And the battery technology thing, you know, this report sounds like it was written about 5 years ago because it's changed. You know, the battery, the nobody, I haven't heard anybody complaining that Teslas don't have enough range. And when Chevy, the new Chevy is going to have, it sounds like a 200-mile range or close to it, that kind of range, people aren't worried about the, you know, for everyday use, 80 miles, you kind of have to think about it, especially, you know, for our Houston members of the audience, you can do 80 miles could be, you can do have more than an 80-mile commute by when you live in Houston and work in Houston. Just if it's on opposite sides of town, you can have more than an 80-mile commute, which would be a problem for an electric vehicle. But a 200-mile electric vehicle, that gets to where you'd have to be commuting excessively inside Houston and doing a lot of other driving alongside. And so that kind of range starts turning into – and if you have that kind of commute, your gas costs – other than right now when oil is so cheap, would be enough to maybe make it where you need to work, live closer to your work. Anyways, it's just interesting to see this, you know, where they're making their study and what they project. And I think I call probably a fair amount of BS on that one. I think that there's got to be, I think the electric market is going to have to be a lot more, would be a lot more than 1% in the world in 25 years. I think it's going to look very different. The electric car market is going to look very different in the United States in the next 5 years, frankly, because at some point it's going to get where it's a lot cheaper and oil prices won't stay this way. So that was an interesting one. And then there was an article that I don't know. I think that obviously it's the last week of the year. So some of the stuff, I wonder if it's as well written, especially the headlines, as one might expect. There was this article about indoor farming. The headline is "Indoor Farming Good for Cannabis, Not So Good for Food," which, okay, well, that's interesting. And the article, I won't go through lots and lots of it, but the thing that's interesting is there's a company called Fluence, which is a startup that builds LED-based lighting systems for legal cannabis growers, and they also partner with researchers to study the impact of, you know, LEDs. So, you know, their expertise is
a perfect show. We lost the Pete.
Uh-oh.
Did you? Is it something you did, Flicked?
What'd you do this time?
No, I didn't do anything. But, you know, same thing happened last time.
Right about this time.
During the news, like later in the news, same thing happened.
He buffered it all the way up, and now it just...
Maybe.
Kernel panicked.
Maybe it's, you know, a slow...
Slow buildup.
Yeah, like a slow data loss. So he starts with a full buffer, and over time it slowly shrinks until it runs out, and then he... drops
hot in under LEDs or any other circumstances.
He's back.
Oh man, I wonder. So how long did it? Was it just quick or
not? About 10-15 seconds.
I'm thinking a couple hours. Probably nice. Longer, like 20-25 seconds, or it was a while
of just dead
enough,
air.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, probably a couple seconds of dead air, and then
we hopped on.
Yeah, we got on, and then we were talking about what happened and why and
how,
and then I popped back up. Oh, because see that I wonder if maybe the solution, so I would know that it had gone away, is we need to figure out, maybe
we could make a hand signal.
Yeah.
Did he go away again?
You didn't see the hand signal?
I made the hand signal.
Yeah, careful with the new signal. Apparently that works.
I guess it's a... I like how you just jumped back in. About...
Well, you did the hand again.
I did the hand signal again. You're going to drop.
The thing I was saying when it disappeared is that, you know, I can't hear. There's no... When you guys aren't talking, like during the news, I can't hear... I don't hear anything from your side, so when the connection goes, I can't tell.
I could play some bed music or something, so there's always some music in the background.
Yeah, anybody who could hear what I had said during that last silence, that's what I said.
We could hum. We could just hum. Mm-hmm.
That's whistling. Where's that noise coming from?
That's whistling.
I think
that's
something wrong with you.
Yeah, that was me. All right, so anyways, I guess that's a future problem for us to solve, so we can figure out, you know, if we have some kind of soft bed music, then I would know that, I would know if the connection goes down. Or that I'd know the difference between the connection being down and shocking you all into silence.
Maybe we just go like, we can still hear you. We can still hear you. Or actually, so we'll just go. Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. Uh-huh. You don't say. Uh-huh. Hmm. Yep. You sure?
Hmm. All right. Well, okay. So if I cut off, then tell me that I'm off. That will do that for the rest of this newscast. You can just say, hey, Peter, we can't hear you.
Did you hear us talking the whole time about why you might have gone off?
No, I mean, it's silent. And, of course, it stays when the connection goes down, it's silent on my end still.
So how are we going to tell you that you're off if you can't hear us?
I know. It was a joke.
If you can't hear me.
I think the hand signal works just as well.
Yeah.
That works too.
We could, we'd have to set up like a video chat.
If only there were like some way we could communicate with each other online by texting or something. Hmm. Like a way to like chat
or
with each other.
Relay the messages.
Yeah, somehow. Like you could relay chat messages. Over the internet.
If Pete's
like a CRI.
If Pete's reading the news, he's not looking at the chat window. He's got his teleprompter up.
Right. So
maybe we need an IP light. Maybe if they had some way to trigger a light in your room,
we could do like pop-up messages. Like we could just hack his browser and do pop-ups.
He would have to keep an eye on something. Maybe like a shock collar.
Yeah, if you could hook Arduino into a shock collar, so we could text, and then when it received the text, it would just shock it.
Yeah.
The only thing is if the internet connection is down, then how does the so then what would happen is it's like,
but you'd know,
hey guys, I'm back, I can hear you.
Groovehouse.
And then every once in a while Jay would just do it anyway.
We got a glitch, Pete. I'm really sorry about that.
take the carrier pigeon to the door and release it.
Passenger pigeon.
The Milgram experiment.
In a couple of hours, Pete will get the notice that we are unable to hear him.
If the bird doesn't get shot down.
So at the end of the show, I'll look out my window and there'll be 40 pigeons outside from the various cutoff times. Well, I guess finishing up the news, since the connection seems to be back. Essentially, I thought that was interesting that there's a company who researches thoroughly how pot friendly various lighting LED lighting systems are, and that they're located in Austin. Their headquarters is in Austin, so they can't actually grow anything at their headquarters. What they do is monitor everything in their lab in California, where it is legal for them to do it. And they're studying other crops. So the deal is about growing crops indoors under artificial lighting. And, there's the thought where that could be a way, you know, especially with climate change and some of that kind of stuff, if you could grow indoors, that there'd be things where that might be superior. The article, like I said at the start, seems to be a little bit sort of end of year. I got to put out X number of words on a subject, and so this one will work. They don't go into the depth. They talk all about this research on it, but in the end, what they say is that the cost of the light for large-scale crops makes it impractical, at least for, again, for things. They say that that it would take, you would spend $18 to buy enough light to raise wheat. You'd spend $18 for a loaf of bread just for the electricity for the wheat, and that farmers wouldn't be able to handle that cost, which is, not particularly surprising. Although if you had a big solar farm, I guess the deal would be you'd have as many acres of solar as you would, you have as many acres of solar panels as you do of plants. And clearly things like wheat and that is going to be, that kind of mass crop is not going to be something that makes sense for it. So unfortunately, the article didn't really talk about if there was any difference in the nutrition or quality of those plants. They just basically came down to it'd be too expensive. The other piece is apparently as marijuana becomes legal to grow in places, that the companies that have been doing grow operations that are all indoors have been looking at moving outside where they can get their light for free. So when you think of sort of the futuristic thing of growing food indoors or the indoor growing setups, it looks like it's not particularly energy efficient. So there's that. And then finally, this one is one where this could be a really big change, and it ties into that Google project. I guess it's Fee or is it Fi? It's one of those. It's the new GIF and GIF thing. Your cell coverage can be fickle. You might get great reception at home or spotty coverage at work or, on the road in between, even though other carriers work fine. And even if your carrier has your entire city pretty well covered, all bets are off when you travel. You can roam on other networks, but, of course, your carrier is going to prioritize its own cell towers, even if there's better ones, stronger ones nearby, and there's roaming fees and all that kind of stuff. Right now, if you wanted to use multiple networks here in the U.S., that'd mean you'd have to carry around multiple SIM cards, and each of those would have a different phone number, which would be a pain, and you have to swap out and all that. In the near future, though, your phone may be able to switch between carriers without you having to swap out cards or phone numbers, even if you're in the middle of a call. Two-year contracts are becoming a thing of the past, thanks in large part to carriers like T-Mobile and new financing schemes from Apple, but it's still a bit of a pain to switch. You have to sign up for a new service, get a number, new SIM card. Even if your phone's unlocked, there's a chance you get into the problems, anybody who's looked at it, of having a phone that only works with AT&T or T-Mobile on the GSM networks, and then there's CDMA networks used by Sprint and Verizon. But that's starting to change. The preview of the future is Google's Project Fee. I'm going to say Fee, unless somebody has a strong objection. Project Fee, which is still invite only, is a wireless service that rides on both T-Mobile and Sprint's networks, depending on which one has the strongest signal. If local Wi-Fi is available, it will switch to that network and even route calls over it. Instead of paying a monthly fee to both T-Mobile and Sprint, customers pay Google a lump fee, and Google handles payout to the carriers. The magic behind Google Fee is, or Fi, Google Fi, I guess is what they want. Google Fi is a new type of SIM card created by a German company called G&D, Giesecke and Devrient, or Devrient. SIM, short for subscriber information card, a SIM card is essentially a tiny computer that handles the complexity of authenticating your phone to the cell towers. When you switch from tower to tower, typically these have been built to handle authentication on one and only one carrier's towers, but G&D's SIM cards allow Google to handle authentication across multiple carriers, including both GSM and CDMA networks. This enables Google's phones to seek out whichever carrier happens to offer the best signal at any given moment. obviously this is pretty complicated. The kinks have not all been sorted out, which is why the reviews so far of Project Fi have been so mixed. Plus, it's only available to a small group of people. And Google only has two networks on board, and it's possible that neither one would be game for a wider rollout of the service. And though it can move your call from a cell network to Wi-Fi if the signal is better, it can't apparently right now it can't reverse that process and transfer the Wi-Fi call to a cellular network. It's similar. This is similar to T-Mobile's thing where and AT&T is activated, and I think Verizon is either talking about it or has enabled it too, where it will use your Wi-Fi network to start a call and switch seamlessly to cellular. But obviously when you start getting into multiple networks and all that, it sounds like Project Fi is, is falling short on that. And most tellingly, it's only fully supported on Google's Nexus phones. The company did just announce support for a few tablets, including certain iPads and Samsung devices, but Project Fi will only provide data, not voice service, to those gadgets, and that will only work on T-Mobile's network, not Sprint. So there's some real limits. But you could see where somebody like Google is big enough to buy large capacity from these carriers and offer, you know, be a virtual, sort of a virtual cell provider. Apple's latest iPads come with its own cross-carrier Apple SIM cards that can support multiple carriers, including AT&T, but not Verizon. The difference there, though, is you still have to pick one and only one carrier at a time. Apple doesn't support swapping carriers on the fly, and it doesn't ship those particular SIMs in phones yet. But you can see the writing on the wall, and if it works out for Apple and Google, expect to see other mobile giants like Microsoft, Samsung, and Xiaomi follow suit. So this one's could be interesting because it's kind of like if you think about how the internet, how the data internet went up against the landline. The landline obviously is in a lot of ways is sort of dying out, and some of it's being replaced by voice over IP, even at the utility level. And so this could be the thing that could be interesting is what happens to these mobile providers when they're just having data and voice bought in bulk by these third party companies who are just going to use whatever's on their net, whichever network is working best in a given spot. We'll keep an eye on that one and see how that works out. I mean, clearly there's some technological hurdles, but if you're going to bet on somebody who can solve them, Google is in the cell phone business, and they could put in enough effort on the cellular end of it, on the network's end of the service to be successful. And that is the news. So I guess, Barrett, are you close to getting a new Nexus phone? And do we need to figure out if we can get somebody to get you a Project Fi?
Aren't you going
to
get a Windows phone now?
No, this one's actually the Samsung, what am I carrying now? The Galaxy S6 Edge Plus is still unbroken and running fine. So I've only had this one for a couple months. It's still fairly newish.
Cool, all the keys work. Oh, okay, so... All right, and everybody else is on iPhones or... Do you have anybody on Android phones besides that one?
Me. Groovehouse.
I got a Nexus 5.
Okay.
Sit up, boy.
Oh, yeah. A little Nexus 5 that I have saved. Went on YouTube and fixed my power button issue.
Awesome.
Yep, so loving the Nexus 5 still.
Loving it, huh?
Don't want to get rid of it.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not an Apple particular story, but it's more of says something about the computer biz. This week, Apple announced kind of not announced. That's the wrong word. There were articles because some very popular laptops and iMacs, the 2008 MacBooks and such have been moved to the obsolete limited support list for Apple. and you hear that and you go, oh my gosh, you know that, because I know people who've got 2008 MacBooks and they're still using them and they're very happy with them. But then you think about it and that's a 7-year-old laptop. And so it's not like Apple can support all the parts. And, you know, essentially when they move it to the obsolete list, it means that they're not going to offer repairs and special parts or any of that kind of stuff on it going forward. There are other places that'll offer it, but, you know, that's pretty amazing that it kind of is an issue that a 7-year-old laptop, you know, moving into the obsolete list, that there's so many people who still have them that work and they're using them and that it's still useful. And same kind of thing for cell phones. You know, we're starting to get to where it's a lot harder to make a cell phone that's that much dramatically better or different than what was around before. You know, much as we'd like to be able to convince ourselves that we need the latest and greatest new ones, a lot of them hold up pretty well for a lot of years. Yeah. So, and while I'm speaking, I'm posting the all the links for the stuff for tonight's show, so that then when I go silent, you can just do it at home. You can pick up the. You can just.
You're kidding, right?
That's ironic. Wow.
That's ironic.
Wow.
Wow.
And it cut out right in the middle?
Yeah, right in the middle of when you say what is it? Yeah. It was perfect.
Nice.
And the next time I go silent, you can...
That's exactly what happened.
Oh, geez. So it almost sounds like... It was very close to as if I had done it on purpose.
It was almost like he's joking. But no, it's a real deal.
But on the plus side, that is now posted, so... you can get the links to the stuff that stuff for tonight's shoe as we wind down the first hour and maybe remind you again about the UnDrive.
Yes, the UnDrive.
You know, the thing we're holding up our end so far. Our listeners have come through pretty well on it, but you know, we like to stand out on these kinds of things, especially technology oriented. And so, you know, if you've thought about it in the past, you know, like during the pledge drive, you almost pledged and then just didn't. Well, now's your chance to do it in a very non-pressure environment. You can just go to kpft.org and follow the links, and it's real quick and easy.
You don't have to interact with anybody.
You can even do it while you still listen to the regular show in progress. So that's kind of cool.
Yes.
Cool. So you don't have to, you don't miss out on any show while you're doing it, and you support KPFT so we can continue to do it.
That would be the cool thing to do. It would be awesome if you supported the radio station with money.
Yeah, we tried to figure out the way where we can power the whole thing on solar and no pledges, but that one that really reduced the program to us standing on a street corner and shouting at people whenever the weather was nice, and it just doesn't work.
It worked better for certain kinds of illegal substances better than for the radio show.
Yes, and so we haven't, and we also haven't figured out the way to where we can limit your supply so that when you're starting to become, we start jonesing for another episode of Technology Bites, then we say, hey, you know, if you pledged, we could give you one right now. First one's free, but no. So, you know, we joke, but it is an important thing, and it is something that we need enough people to do to make this work for everybody.
Don't make us make Groovehouse come over and rough you up.
Because he's got a big old Nexus 5 phone. You don't want him to put that upside your head.
Hey, it's not as big as Flicted's, whatever he's holding.
Hey, no.
iPhone 8.
No, Jay's got a 6 Plus or something.
Well, it's got a battery pack on it.
What about my phone?
It's huge.
It is huge. And it's even huger because of the pack. Although I will say it's weird owning a phone that's been damaged. I don't know how you deal with it. Like either
your phones. I mean, the hard part is cracked screens when they work, and you wind up with like no thumbprint because you slowly shave.
But
all
do you ever feel
off.
Like my phone? Like I dropped my phone in New Zealand and smashed it, and I got it repaired, and I thought, well, this is all right. But you know, in my mind, I know that it's a aftermarket screen. It's not, you know, it's probably not. You know, it's not the original. It's not the original screen.
But if you set it next to another phone, could you pick it out of a lineup?
I mean, no, is it, you can't. But the other thing is that.
But you know.
Well, know. The other thing is that when you drop a phone, it breaks the glass
and your heart.
Well,
and your wallet.
Yeah,
but it's naive to think that that's the only thing wrong with the phone when you drop it.
Oh
the
yeah, glass it probably breaks. Jostles all no, sorts like, of stuff on the inside.
What's weird, and I noticed like the one thing my phone is doing now is that I never had much use for Siri, but there's apparently the iPhone has two microphones.
Oh, you think you killed one of them, maybe?
I killed one. There's a microphone for the phone calls and doing voice recordings and stuff, and Siri has its own dedicated mic.
Oh, wow.
From what I've read online, I think that's true, because I can record voice stuff no problem, but when I try to use Siri, you can see it doesn't register the recording very, and she doesn't hear me. And I don't have much use for Siri, but the fact that it's gone really irritates me. The functionality that I did not utilize is no longer available. So there's that.
And it's a 5 or that's
a 6?
Okay.
Plus.
Well, and the other sad thing is I'm assuming if you got it on the Un-carrier type programs where you're buying the phone over time, then it's like a car where if it's broken or scratched or whatever, you buy a new car and you have it for a while, and then, oh, now it's been dinged in a parking lot or you have an accident in it or whatever. You still got to keep paying for it.
Right.
Until it's paid off and you can trade it for a new one.
Well, I have to deal with it. I mean, I don't know whether I should get it fixed or, you know, get the microphone fixed or just wait it out. I'll feel bad if I sell it to someone and I don't disclose that Siri doesn't work properly. It works over Bluetooth. Anyway, that music tells us it's time to take a break. We're going to go take a nap.
I am tired.
It's been a long year.
Wake me up in 3 minutes.
All right. Well, you're listening to Technology Bytes. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plickton.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
In the closing days of 2015, and KPFT is in the final days of its year-end undrive. Rather than a fund drive, KPFT is seeking to encourage listeners to give for great community radio. Just visit kpft.org right now and help today. Radio like this is driven by volunteers and powered by listeners like you. We don't depend on advertising. Your financial contribution keeps the programming you love going strong. Your donation is tax deductible. More importantly, you're a part of something much bigger than yourself. The idea that visions of hope, music that inspires, and a voice for the community gives a greater message to everyone in our city. Again, please visit kpft.org in the short time left for the KPFT Undrive. Thanks.
Don't you This is KPFT Houston.
Pronto vendrá un pledge drive a KPFT y nosotros necesitamos su ayuda para hacerlo un suceso. Por favor, considere ser un voluntario para contestar nuestros teléfonos durante el programa de lenguaje en español. Usted contestará escuchadores como usted y ayudará a esta comunidad de radio. En no más una hora o dos, usted puede ayudar a tomar donaciones. Su esfuerzo será la diferencia a poder ser esto un ambiente divertido. Personas interesadas en contestar teléfonos necesitan que ser disponibles los martes y sábados y ser bilingües en inglés y español. Usted será un voluntario en el estudio de KPFT en la 419 Lovett Boulevard. Para escribirse, contacte nuestra oficina de voluntarios al 713-526-4000 o mándenos un email a voluntier@kpft.org. Esto es KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return to Technology Bites.
I'm assuming there's no Barrett time?
No.
I didn't even bother to ask.
Yeah. Silly, man. Although, New Year's resolution, I'll try and have more, which shouldn't be hard.
Yeah, you gotta, what, you're gonna have to come up with 4 or 5? Well, so I guess we should go to one of the other features of the show, eh?
A
bite
of the apple.
So,
should we say something when it ends?
No, because I can see the progress bar on the player. Even though I can hear you guys rustling around in your chairs and stuff while it plays. So, anyways. There are actually, you know, once Christmas happened, then suddenly there's like more Apple rumors and more new stuff. So, you know, leading up to Christmas, the Bite of the Apple segment was tough to find things for, and Try, Buy, or Fry was kind of thin, but this time got some stuff. There's rumors for the iPhone 7. There is a new rumor that a company called Catcher Technologies will help supply chassis components for upcoming iPhones that are said to be both waterproof and use new compound materials to conceal their antennas, according to a new rumor. Catcher is said to be likely to supply 30 to 50% of the chassis shipments for the new hardware, thereby placing the company as Apple's largest chassis partner. Where the idea of a waterproof iPhone has been rumored before, this is the first rumor to incorporate the idea of antenna changes too. Apple could possibly be looking to blend the antenna into the case, into the chassis of the iPhone itself. The 6S and 6S Plus are already more water resistant than their predecessors, thanks to an added gasket and various silicone seals. Going waterproof though would involve a thorough redesign, including figuring out how to seal off ports, switches, and buttons. This rumor would also be consistent with notions that Apple might be looking towards a non-metallic classic. Since the iPhone 5, Apple's tended towards an all-aluminum design, but other materials might improve structural stability and or reduce manufacturing costs. Apple, in fact, adopted tougher 7000 series aluminum for the 6S and 6S Plus, but presumably at an extra expense. In another rumor that this one's kind of sooner, they think that there could be a new iPhone announced in April is one of the rumors, and that it will be the so-called iPhone 6C with a slightly larger than the iPhone 5S's battery, which the milliamp capacity I don't think is that important. The report cites insider Foxconn employees and corroborates multiple rumors claiming that the 4-inch iPhone will feature an A9 processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs base storage, Touch ID, and the same curved glass used on the iPhone 6 and later. Apple suppliers will reportedly begin mass production in January ahead of a possible March announcement and April release. There's at least 5 sources have now predicted the iPhone 6C will launch in early 2016, since rumors about the device began circulating this year. So, in November, often reliable Japanese blog Mac Otakara I'm sure I'm butchering that, reported that Apple had developed a new 4-inch iPhone that is essentially an iPhone 5S with 6th-generation iPod Touch features. The iPhone 6C may also come in at least 3 colors and would probably lack 3D touch. And lastly, not a usual source for Apple rumors, but CNET is reporting that that Apple may be working out deals with LG and Samsung to use OLED screens, organic light-emitting diode screens, which promises better quality images when compared with liquid crystal display, which is the standard that's been used in computers for years. The Electronic Times, a Korean tech publication, wrote about the change, citing unnamed sources. This would be the first big change in iPhone screen technology since 2010, when Apple released the Retina displays that promised to show so much details the users wouldn't be able to distinguish what's on the screen from a printed image. Despite that change, Apple's been relying on LCD technology since the iPhone's debut in 2007. Apple's spokesperson would not comment. Neither LG nor Samsung immediately responded to a request for comment from CNET. Previous stories from Japan's Nikkei and others have also claimed Apple's planning to change it. So who knows if these are correct. In the past, Tim Cook has said he doesn't like OLED. A few years ago, he said that he considered the technology, quote, awful. He said, quote, if you ever buy anything online and really want to know what the color is, as many people do, you should really think twice before you depend on the color from an OLED display. Although his opinion may have changed since Cook's statements, many of Apple's competitors have switched to OLED displays, and even the Apple Watch uses that technology. So it would be moving towards what the Apple Watch did. And that's the Apple rumors for now. One thing I saw over the holiday is Best Buy was offering $100 discounts on the Apple Watch. And I must say that with looking at the pricing with the $100 off of it, made them look a lot closer to something that more people would buy. I don't know if any of you had that experience, but it seemed like
seemed like you went away, Pete.
Oh no, it seemed like it was very quiet on your end. I thought maybe somebody'd be speaking up on the Apple Watch thing, but yeah, Best Buy was offering them for $100 off, which takes that $350 or $399 base sport watch down under $300, which starts. I'm not saying that made it like, oh yeah, you'll rush right out and buy one, but it sure made it. It sure felt a little different than when you look at it and it's look at it at the full price.
If they gave that level of percentage off on MacBook Airs, I'd be buying some.
The one that surprised me this year is because I finally saw one in person. I hadn't been in an Apple store. I went to an Apple store over the summer because actually I went twice because of a broken broken iPhone screen. And you notice I said I went twice. That's because the same screen, the phone got replaced, and then that one got broken. So it was a real happy summer around our household, at least for one of my children. Being there, you know, I hadn't been in an Apple store, been in an electronics store that had the Apple stuff out there. I don't know if you guys have seen the MacBook, the 12-inch MacBook in person, the one with the Retina display.
No.
I'd read the reviews and everybody talked about the key. They didn't like the keyboard and some of that stuff. And there were all kinds of, you know, they talked all kinds of limitations on it. Seeing it in person gives me the kind of, oh, I would really like to have one of those that I got with the MacBook Air from the very beginning. They're very thin on both sides, you know, both on the base and on the screen side. And the keyboard basically goes right to the edge of the edge of the laptop, but it actually makes an iPad Air or an iMac, well, a MacBook Air, sorry, look clunky. Which they're not. I mean, they're thin and small, but the MacBook itself makes them look sort of chunky. And if it wasn't underpowered, I'd be more jazzed to try and get one. Also, the price, if underpowered, especially underpowered for the price, because they cost more than a MacBook Air. The airs are pretty, have gotten pretty cheap, or they've just not, their prices have sort of dropped though. Afflicted. I mean, yeah, they're not going to give you 25% off, but they're, you can get one under $1,000.
Yeah. They had, during the Christmas stuff, they had, $100 off. Some stuff was $200 off, but, yeah, it's still not quite at the price point I would jump at.
Oh, you may want to look on the refurbs or the other thing usually they're legit, I guess. But one of the things that's interesting to me is January after, especially when the colleges get back in session on Craigslist, you almost always see somebody who's selling like a fresh in the box Apple laptop that they got for Christmas and don't want, and they'd rather have the cash around. But of course you have to worry about legitimacy and stuff like that.
Speaking of legitimacy and selling stuff, I had the most, this is like an object lesson for those of you wishing to sell technology. And people ask me why do you bother with eBay and sell your stuff on eBay, and why don't you just use Craigslist? And so I was at the Starbucks getting coffee this past weekend, in fact, and there was a scuffle outside. There was a commotion, some hubbub,
kerfluffle.
And so, as rather than describe what was happening, I'll just give you what happened. Was that some guy was selling an iPhone and arranged to meet the buyer at a public place, like you're supposed to do if you're going to sell on Craigslist. And they met in front of Starbucks, and sure enough, the people that came to buy the iPhone jumped him.
And at the Starbucks?
At the Starbucks. They had the getaway car in the parking lot. They had the whole thing set up. But what they didn't count on was that the patio-dwelling, coffee drinkers decided they were going to get involved, so they tackled the guy who tried to steal the phone.
It's a rough Starbucks.
But nobody really knew what to do or who was in the right or who was – it was really hard to understand. So there was a guy pinned down by another guy, and they were trying to get more people to hold him down, and nobody was really sure what to do. So the guy broke free, and then the getaway car pulled up, and he jumped in the driver's side and across it into the passenger seat and sped away.
Wow.
But the guy got his phone back, and a bunch of cuts and bruises to go with it. But
jeez,
you know, I told Cynthia about it. She goes, "Who tries to sell stuff on Craigslist? You know, people
looking to get beat up at Starbucks.
People looking to get murdered." So,
well, I think some of it is I haven't bought anything myself directly off Craigslist, but I've helped other people. Things that are too large to steal in a Starbucks seems to work better, like furniture or exercise equipment or stuff like that.
I will say that there's certain kinds of things that you sell maybe on Craigslist that it makes sense, and that the people that, I mean, I'm sure there are a group of people that are just perusing, looking for like iPhone or laptop sellers, you know, thinking they're going to get a payday. But I bought a lens off of somebody on Craigslist one time, and it was I could imagine what kind of scallywag would have this kind of lens and try to bogusly sell it on Craigslist. But
And I take it back. Actually, I bought an iMac off of Craigslist. But the people who were selling it, basically, they gave me direct. You know, I went to their house and bought the computer. You know, it's not like I'm going to go in these old people's house and grab their computer and run out the door.
Yeah, I didn't know things were so dangerous. I've just made one. I think I bought like an old mini fridge a handful of years ago. And the Starbucks staff were like, "Sir, you can't bring in the fridge." okay.
Well, just a reminder to be careful out there if you're trying to sell your hardware. There's chances of getting ripped off no matter what you do. But there are people that are actively preying on people to let their guard down. It would be nothing. I mean, you pull out the phone, even in a public place, to show it to the potential buyer, and they just grab it and off they run.
That gives me an idea for a company. It could be a unicorn. I'd call it Beatdown, you know, but it'd be DWN at the end. You know, you leave the vowel out so that it's more different. And you recruit like people who are in martial arts classes and stuff like that. And it's like Uber, where you call somebody, and when you go to the Starbucks to show somebody your phone, they're like nearby and ready, and you pay them $10 or something. And if the dude tries to take your phone and run off, then you throw him a beat down.
Really, you just need to go watch a lot of bad 80s TV and conduct every transaction like a drug deal, I think. You know, have guys with cars with muscles flash the like headlights, show the money.
You have an armed proxy.
Yeah, yeah. I think that would work.
So I would think one of the things is if you're doing this kind of transaction, doing it in a public place is a plus, but you also want to like make sure that you transact your business in a place where there's not a clear shot for them to get out the door and get away, or else you're sort of kind of SOL. Maybe take their picture when they first get there would it be another thing, but not with the phone you're selling. Just so that you don't hand them the stolen phone with their picture on it.
Although it seems like if you're going to go steal an iPhone, it would be easier just to go steal a random one out of someone's hand at a Starbucks versus them. Surely, you know, they contacted you or there's some kind of trail back to you,
right?
Having initiated, hey, let's meet at Starbucks. And I would think that could be used somehow.
Well, and the other piece with it is the guy, if they'd gotten away with the phone, you know, there's that whole, well, I guess maybe if you've wiped it to sell, then you don't have that connection to your account. So you can't get to
phone kind of thing.
Yeah, you can't do the where's my phone back to my phone or whatever, or do the remote do the remote wipe.
Yeah,
thing.
If he had already done all the wiping, then you lose Find My iPhone and all the features that go along
now,
with it.
Now, hasn't there been a little bit of pressure on the carriers not to activate phones that they know could be stolen or something along those lines?
I think if they're reported as stolen, like if the IMEIs are reported as stolen.
But they've only just, I mean, it may be even in just the past year that they've bothered to.
It's definitely been less than a year,
yeah.
I'm pretty
now,
sure.
Now, one cool thing I believe that starts January 1st, 2016 is open, non-concealed, unconcealed, whatever you want to carry it.
Open
carry of handguns. Because you can carry open carry rifles and
although
shotguns.
Although you still have
CHL.
The CHL, but it's not a C anymore.
Yeah.
It's just a.
So get that.
HL.
I would say, you know, if I showed up, and I would never do this, but I think, you know, you show up with an iPhone and an arm, sidearm, that could be a deterrent.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. You have an armed proxy service.
Okay.
You know, so somebody that's armed shows up and collects the goods and collects the cash and then trades them.
Escrow.
Yeah.
With the three, though.
Yeah, well,
because
you
get
escrow down. Yeah, this is Pete and I are going to go into business. This is
and if you pay extra for the big guy who when the person, okay, well, let me see the phone, and as you hand the phone to them, the 6'5" behemoth puts their arm around the guy's neck gently and lightly.
I've got it. That's the new thing. What it is, fake iPhones. Cheap to produce, you produce it cheaply. So when you meet someone to sell them your iPhone, you give them the fake
China's
iPhone.
China's already done that. We just need to go get some.
And if they run off with it, you go, okay, well.
It powers up once. It just shows. All they have to do is power up once and show the little Apple thing.
What about an iPhone that's really just a dummy trigger on a die pack?
Well, and you just have a little colorful screen, entry screen with LED lights behind it and a AA battery to power it.
Hey, this
and
is
then,
an iPhone. I'm sorry. This is an iPhone 3 with a 6 written on it in crayon.
fill the rest of it with plastic explosives.
I saw a thing online where somebody bought a PS3 or PS4. I don't know if it's on Craigslist.
Was it a PS3 with a little hard drive?
No.
It was a wooden box.
It was a wooden block inside of it.
Just to give it weight?
Yeah.
They took out all the
yeah.
ends?
Yeah.
That's horrible. Scam people.
That scam's going around. There's people, like, I've heard of people, you know, selling speakers out of the back of a truck or something at a store.
That's happened to me a couple times. So apparently there are parts of Houston that this is more prevalent than other parts. Like there are
that
certain...
scam has been around for decades. I got approached in 1990, white van.
I've gotten contacted at least three times.
It's usually
but not
TVs
in the last 10 years.
And a couple of speaker systems.
This
like
was
a home
stereos
system.
Mm-hmm. And speaker systems.
So I know enough not to do that. Are they just selling you bunk stuff, more or less broken stuff that you can't verify that it works right then, right
it
there?
It depends. I mean,
sometimes
I've heard.
It's
I've
just
heard
a brick.
Sometimes
it's just a box. They'll show you, they'll open a box and they'll show you the speaker and all this, and then they'll say, okay, let me get you one that's unopened, and they send you on your way. And
yeah, my Spidey sense always goes off, but like around 59 and certain exits, you know, like outside of 610 but before the Beltway, you know, I'll get gas and I'll stop off in there because I don't work too far away from there. And generally, I was even in a motorcycle once, and I was like, dude, how am I going to get a TV home?
Well, sometimes, really? Sometimes, of course, they're hot goods, right?
Like, that's always figured it was
sometimes
stolen.
Sometimes they're hot.
Not
sometimes
fake.
It's a scam.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's fake.
Sometimes I've actually heard that sometimes it's actually like warehouse distribution centers that have a bunch of spares.
Yeah.
And so they just unload them that way. Mm-hmm. And they still make a profit off of them.
Sure. Two times
it
was the same
cheap.
Guy. I recognized the guy all within about a 6-month period hawking the same kind of thing. So, you know, I'm just kind of curious.
In high school, I worked at a major home improvement chain that doesn't exist anymore. And they had a big meeting because on 59 there used to be, I don't know if it's still there, there was a huge flea market.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Still yeah. There.
And the management was up in arms because merchandise from this store with the like price stickers still on it was getting sold at this flea market. And then just to make the whole thing even more surreal, I had like terrible chicken pox because I was 17, and so I was sick for like 2 weeks. I was floored. Uh-huh. While I was sick, so this is your high school job. So while I was sick, the entire management of that place got arrested because they had been the ones taking the stuff. And selling it. They had taken riding lawnmowers, apparently.
Wow.
Even it was a home improvement center and they got caught, and so everybody in charge was no longer there, and there were brand new people running.
It was like Lord of the Flies.
Well, and then when you call to come back to work after being sick for a few weeks, and you're kind of having to half prove that you work there.
I was really sick. How long was I out?
Yeah, it's like Fallout 4, right?
And then
yeah.
and then there were all these weird walking people that were dead and trying to attack you.
Hey, how long has Chad Vader been day shift manager? He wasn't here last time.
Chad Vader.
Yeah. Finally on the day shift.
Yeah, but so the theft thing on that, the some of that, I wonder if off some of the warehouse places, if it's not just people taking, getting a little, having a little side business, redistribution center business there.
They're like Robin Hoods.
On the Robin part. Well, I guess now would be a good time for the next segment. In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip in the snart tank? So this one is a Mac one, but it is free. So if you have a Mac and you're into this, it's pretty cool. I don't know if you guys have heard of OpenEMU. It's a nope. It's a classic game emulator for Mac. And just this week, they announced the latest version of it. They've added support for PlayStation, Nintendo 64, and others alongside a ton of new features. So this is just a free download. I'm assuming there's an equivalent thing for PCs and perhaps hopefully even like Linux. But the OpenEMU's official support for 16 new consoles is what it says here. But I would say the word new is certainly advisable as you hear which ones. It's for like the Atari 5200 and 7800, the Atari Lynx, ColecoVision, Famicom Disk System, Intellivision, Nintendo 64, Odyssey 2 Video Pack, PCFX, some of these I've never heard of, SG-1000, Sega CD, the Sony PSP, Sony PlayStation, that would be PlayStation 1, obviously, TurboGrafx-CD PCE, Vectrex and WonderSwan. I don't know what the, but the, you know, the, beyond that, the newest update also adds in some interface tweaks, real-time gameplay rewind, better screenshot organization, and improved homebrew support. So I think on the Windows side, it's like Phoenix is one that's new. There's another one called RetroArch, which I think is for the like Windows Linux end of the pool. But it's free, and so if you're wanting to get into the kind of old classic games and stuff without having to go to a Craigslist and go to a Starbucks to meet somebody to get a Nintendo 64, might be worth, or yeah, that ColecoVision. You know, some of these things, I think it's probably a lot easier to find the games online than it would be to try and find actual physical copies of.
Even if you found them, you're probably never going to find those little plastic overlays that went on the controller.
Yeah, ColecoVision. And, yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, I wonder how they handle that. Do they have, you know, I guess you have to, it's just remember what keys do what. There could be a whole new market for that, overlays to put on your keyboard to...
Some guy selling overlays on Craigslist.
I showed up my overlays.
I'm not falling for
he had a standby car waiting. It's dangerous out there, folks. Be careful.
And then one that... this one is in the blurry spot between... between something like directly right now, there's the start of it, and so it's not as tied directly to a product. But the Internet of Things we've talked about, you know, you can call it the Internet of Things, the Internet of Everything, Universal Object Interaction, or whatever buzzword you choose that begins with smart. But there's more predictions about how much stuff is going to get connected. Juniper Research predicts that by 2020, there will be 38.5 billion connected devices. IDC says it'll be 20.9 billion, and Gartner guesses 25 billion. So you can just, so now you know the range. You can just, if you want to sound really smart, talk about how the Internet of Things will lead to, you know, 26.2 billion. Devices connected by 2020. One of the things that's interesting on the Internet of Things and you don't hear so much is most of the gadgets they're talking about will be industrial. The Internet of Things apparently is less about you changing the color of your light bulb and more about companies large and small finding new ways to make their businesses more easy and efficient. If you're not into this Internet of Things deal, right? But, if you bought an Apple TV this fall, you actually have a HomeKit hub in your house because an Apple TV can act as a HomeKit hub. And if you buy a HomeKit-enabled device, it'll be very easy to set up. If you have an Amazon Echo, try saying, Alexa, turn the lights off. And if you have a Philips Hue set, it'll work. And you've already set it up. Of course, so it won't be that big a surprise. But so now the thing that comes up in 2015, you know, there was all the talk about Internet of Things and it's growing, but it still hasn't been figured out how all this stuff is going to work together. Apple has HomeKit. Google has Brillo and Nest. Microsoft has Windows. Samsung has SmartThings. There's Wemo and Wink and Zigbee and
Philips
Z-Wave.
Philips is out there, yeah.
And Thread.
X10.
And none of those, you know, some of those names sound made up, and you probably could make some up, and people wouldn't know it. But those were all real.
X-Team with pop-up ads.
Here's the issue: is that Schneier's coming out, like Bruce Schneier, the crypto demigod, and a lot of people are coming out and saying, like, look, all the legislation that exists right now for the internet, that is going to cover the Internet of Things, and it's kind of true. And he's pointing to a lot of, you know, like the. What was it? Philips with the Hue light bulbs. They allowed a lot of different bulbs to be able to work with their products. And then 3 or 4 months ago, they said, no, you can only buy Philips things. And they used the DMCA to affect that. So you couldn't get around their stuff to do it. There was a little bit of backlash, and Philips backed down and said, okay, we'll open up our hub back up to other light bulbs. But the issue is that we need to be really, really careful, or else we're going to be locked out of this or regulated out of it in the same way that the internet's trying to be regulated. So when you vote for a law, or when you think, or when you hear laws like that, for instance, like key escrow or backdoors or stuff like that, just think down in 5 years or 10 years, you know, do you want someone to have a backdoor into your fridge, your refrigerator, to your, you know, your coffee makers, to things like that? But it's getting kind of weird like that. That's like with the Krupp's coffee makers and their, you know, their RFID tagged What are those called? Like the
coffee pot. Or the Keurig. The Keurig.
Yeah, the Keurig. That's what I was trying to say. Yeah, so just things like that. You know, just technology locking us out and those things going over the internet to make sure that, you know, this is an actual legitimate, you know, coffee cup and it hasn't been used before. You know, all that kind of stuff. It's we just have to be careful. I really like the idea of the Internet of Things, but I don't like the idea that everything in my house is going to have to go through a, you know, like an approved party or some kind of DMCA thing. Or, you know, I just want my stuff to be my stuff.
Well, I also don't – the other thing that's interesting to me about it is haven't they learned – why haven't they learned from the kind of larger internet deal? You know, you don't, the whole reason the internet works is because there's a few basic protocols and they work the same all the time. You know, like browsers. You don't have – there's not like Windows HTML and Google Chrome HTML and Safari HTML from Apple.
There kind of is.
There's a bit – there's what they support, but there's an external standard.
It's gotten better. The standards have gotten better. Before HTML5, there was definitely like everybody was kind of developing their own tags that were specific to their browser.
It's kind of starting to do that again though. Microsoft is coming out with their own – you know, what's their new – what's it called?
Spartan or
no
Edge.
Edge.
The Edge
like
browser.
They've got brand new Edge extensions, and it's like everyone's trying to – so not to run back to the Internet of Things and Schneier, but Schneier kind of said, like, look, here's what we need. You know, like with the automobile industry, you can go to an auto parts store and you can buy, you know, tires from a number of different stores. Batteries are all kind of the same. You know, you can get generic parts for a Honda from five different makers. But he's saying that instead, the Internet of Things is on track to become a battleground of competing standards because companies, they're really just trying to build monopolies by locking each other out. And that's kind of how we see, you know, with all the streaming music services, with the different movie services and things like that. And he thinks it might only get worse.
Yeah, which and it seems like, again, if the protocols, you know, the protocols, the way that stuff is communicated with these things, it's not going to be all that different, I don't think. You know, it's not like they're going to be they're not using some kind of totally you know, all the differences between them are there on purpose.
Oh yeah. Yeah, but for instance, the Philips Hue stuff, they use Zigbee, which is supposed to be open source, and you can go buy Zigbee stuff, you know, from SparkFun or Adafruit or from Amazon or from wherever and build your own stuff, but they just threw another bit on there saying like, "Hey, if it doesn't have this kind of serial number associated with it, let's not let it work." So it's arbitrary. It's not that they're technical
and it's for anti-competitive Schneier. That's a good point on him is that it's not for a legitimate business purpose. That, you know, the thing about it is it's not like that makes it any more secure. You know, it seems to me the better thing would be if these companies were working together and coming up with how do you make a secure communication between your legitimate device and your controller.
Well, and it's not a value add either. I mean,
yeah, well, but part of that is because that's because they're trying to not have competition. So, you know, one of these where there's the people who, you know, let the market decide. Well, a lot of the time when the market gets to decide, they use the technology and a couple laws to keep competitors away and keep competitors out, as opposed to it opening it up or making it available for more people. Because it doesn't, you know, the article goes on to say that it quotes a guy from Forrester Research, and he has a really good point, which is people don't buy this stuff to – most people don't buy the stuff to, you know, make a smart home. What they do is they have a specific thing they want to accomplish. You know, I want to lock my door or I want to unlock my front door remotely. I want to feed my pet. I want to, you know, manage that light switch. You know, they're single things and you can't hardly do those. You know, a lot of this stuff works. He calls them, I like this, he calls them app-cessories. So that's kind of clever. But, you know, the sad thing is with all the different formats and all the competition, you know, all the competing monopolists, you know, budding monopolists out there, the research shows only 7% of Americans participate in or partake of even a single smart home scenario. And I think part of that's because, you know, you end up worrying, well, if I buy a new refrigerator, will it work with my toaster? It's sort of sad. You know, the computer business, that was one of the things that has been different all along, is the having the sort of standard parts and protocols has been what makes it work. Mm-hmm. and the Internet of Things, where it's like, no, it's my proprietary internet. And it, and again, if somebody came through, I guess I could be okay with it if somebody came up with something where it worked better than everybody else's and it was secure without, you know, without the law basically saying, no, you can't even look at it. You know, if you find an exploit, then it's illegal that you found out, kind of approach. You know, but because if you're going to connect up light bulbs, do you really want to have to worry, you know, to replace the fixture? Right now you go and you buy one that connects up. You know, you go to the store and anyone that's going to take, you know, if it has a positive and a negative pole on the light fixture, you can wire it in. Where if you got, imagine when you have to go and you're buying a light, you're replacing a light fixture or a lamp and you have to figure out if it works with your network. That's kind of pathetic. It's really sort of disgusting and sad.
I mean, we take this for granted a lot, but if you think, like, you know, if you had to when you bought a lamp or any kind of appliance for your home, if there were multiple kinds of outlets in the United States, and that was a concern. And when you built a new house, if you had to decide, hey, I'm going to use like 3-prong or 2-prong or 110 or 220. So all that's standardized, and I think that's gone a long way. You know, you don't have to worry, like, if I buy this, can I plug it into my home? Unless it's industrial, you can't. And I think that's kind of where we need to get. Everything needs to work.
The final paragraph in the article is pretty good. It says, know this, though. It may be coming like a molasses tidal wave, but the Internet of Things is coming. It's not a matter of if or whether, but when and how. 2015 was about starting to sort out what these devices will look like, how they'll work together, and how we'll make sure they don't ruin everything. The tracks have been laid. Maybe it'll be 2016, maybe the year after, but the train is coming. It'll have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and probably 8 other things, and you'll definitely get a push notification when it gets here. So, yeah, you know, because you look – that's it's only gotten marginally better than when it was, what, X10 and Radio Shack had some non-X10 stuff. And it hasn't changed all that dramatically except that there's now 20 players instead of 2. Or, you know, Zigbee and X10. Here's one that I just wonder. This just seems like somebody was drinking heavily when they came up with this one. But it's from Ford. You know, there's the deal where you drive your car downtown and you park it. And you have to park a ways from your destination. Somebody at Ford thought, wouldn't it be nice if you could, like, take one of the wheels off your car and turn it into an electric unicycle? I am not joking. You'd only have to detach the wheel and put on a kit that gives you the controls and seating you need to get moving. As with other patents, there's no guarantee you'll ever see a product out of this. Ford may only be locking down the idea to prevent others from swiping it later. There's actually a picture of it. You know, the car would have like an automatic jack. And so that it would jack up, you know, the back corner of the car, and you could take the wheel off and attach the, like, it sounds like a really bad Power Rangers scenario or Batman.
That sounds like it works a lot better. When I first read that, I thought they meant the steering wheel. I'm like, just use a car wheel. That makes so much more sense. So now that idea sounds really plausible. Now that you're actually using a car wheel.
Do you have like a quick release on the tire, or do you actually have to remove, like, you know, 5-6?
Surely
I'm sure they're not going to make you undo the lug nuts and put them back on every time you want to use it. I think they should adopt this for like the next Batman movie. So instead of having the like separate cycle, he has to pull over, you know, the kind of redneck Batman where he puts it up on a cinder block and takes the wheel off and turns it into a unicycle. I don't know. I think the biggest obstacle to it would be that, first off, it would feel pretty low class to be standing there in your suit downtown taking the wheel off your car. And then riding around on the unicycle thing, I think there's not that big a difference between the powered unicycle and like actually riding a regular one that you pedal yourself.
It could be really awkward if you had, like, you know, a big 4x4 Ford pickup too, because the tire's going to be pretty big.
Got to have a stepladder to get up on the unicycle. So it looks like, I mean, I guess it's just to save not having to put a wheel in the trunk, but the unicycle, it looks like it attaches to, is pretty large too. So why not just have the wheel on there?
Yeah, really. Well, it seems like I'm guessing their thing. It must have been maybe a mental exercise where they're like, well, geez, you know, the motor. Well, and where's the batteries for this thing? That's
where
the other
part. Where do you leave the unicycle? Does the unicycle break down into a skateboard so you can go that last little last little bit to your desk?
Because the seat comes off and becomes a skateboard. I'm sure it came from a lot of new electric vehicles have like the motors in the wheel assembly.
And then the skateboard breaks into to give you roller skates.
Or the unicycle thing, the handlebars sort of fold down and you just use it as your office chair.
They're just trying to distract us from our lack of flying cars. That's all that's going on.
Well, they figured out after we fell for hoverboards that have wheels on them that we'll fall for anything, maybe. A couple other new things. This one is a cool trend, and it's one of those where every time I see one or see another one announced, it's like I feel like I should be getting into doing something with it. It's more makery. The rise of the smartphone has given rise to something else, incredibly cheap, powerful components. There's a new one called the Pine Mini Computer that takes some of these smartphone components and uses them to create highly capable, highly affordable, bare bones rigs. It's powered by a quad-core 64-bit ARM processor running Android, Ubuntu, or any other compatible OS you load up from the micro SD slot. There's also two IO expansion slots, dual core graphics capable of outputting 4K video, up to 2 gigs of integrated RAM, two USB 2.0 ports, optional Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, and a vast array of potential uses. It starts at like $20 for the board with this stuff on it. And with, you know, an operating system like Android or those kinds of things, there's where some, you know, Internet of Things or some home automation stuff, I'm kind of surprised that somebody hasn't stepped up, you know, with ties to that other story, stepped up with sort of an open source approach with that, where you take these kind of little boxes and make your own secure, real Internet of Things that you can actually use and add whatever devices you like to it, instead of the proprietary garbage that they're trying to stuff down our throats right now. You know, it just seems like there's a lot of things that you could automate, you know, that instead of going and buying a timer or whatever, you could have something that was a little smarter, you know, like a thing that checks the time and also looks at, you know, maybe hooks up to something that measures the amount of light or whatever and decides whether it turns on a lamp in your house or whatever, or have a motion detector to it or any of those things. It seems like one of these for, you know, if it's starting at $20, it'd be pretty cheap to figure out, you know, to make something with it that would, it's the Arduino and some of those kinds of things. But now that they're moving to where they have operating systems on them that, are regular ones, it means it calls into a lot of skills that before were kind of on the sidelines. You know, a lot of people you'd have to learn more stuff to make it work than maybe it was worth, but. Putting Ubuntu on it or Android and telling it what to do seems like could be fun and useful. Now, have you done much in the way of automation with the, I know there's what, there's Arduino and there's, I know there's a couple others that are out there.
Raspberry Pi
is a big one. BeagleBone. Yeah. There's a handful. The microcosm's getting larger.
So that's good. And you've seen what other people do with it. I mean, it seems like that would be the thing for the ultimate, you know, Christmas light controller.
Oh yeah.
If you got the right setup, it's got to basically turn light switches on and off at various speeds or whatever. And, it seems like that would be something you could do with, I don't know, some kind of USB device. But, one of these days I need to break down and get one of those type devices and start playing with it and see what I can figure out to make it new.
Raspberry Pis are pretty cool just because, whereas the Arduino, it's kind of a black box, you know, it's a microcontroller, you don't really see what's going on. The BeagleBone Blacks and the Raspberry Pis, and it looks like, you know, this the Pine too, you can actually put Linux on there and get a full operating system, and it feels like a computer. It's really neat. And then on top of that, you've got all these, you know, in general, you know, input output pins that you can do, you know, Griswold Christmas or pretty much whatever you want. So yeah, we'll have to get you into that at one of the next geek gatherings, Pete, that you come down to. Let us know and we will indoctrinate you.
There you go. Sounds good. Sounds fun. Yeah, well, see, I'd seen the deal with the whole microcontroller thing. I had read up on it, and it was just like I don't want to learn a new thing like that.
It's a pretty small jump from like the kind of code that you're writing, you know, on a daily basis to get into that. It's a lot easier to go from where you are to the hardware side than to go from the hardware side, I think, to into programming.
Your
mind is ready for it. You're there. Cool. You just don't know it.
You can do it.
You can do
it. I just need to find my Obi-Wan or Snoke. and then finally, on new stuff, apparently the Google Glass, the second Google Glass, is looming on the horizon. There were some pictures found on the FCC website. It's called Glass for Work. You know, after all the stuff with the first Google Glass, the widespread derision that the tech giant is readying a second iteration, and we kind of know what it'll look like. It's not that different from the first, but it's going to be aimed at enterprises, as several reports earlier in the year from 9to5 Google suggested. Now, the first images of Google Glass 2.0 have surfaced on the FCC website. The new version of Google Glass has a larger glass prism, a faster Intel Atom processor, 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi for more bandwidth-intensive tasks like video streaming, and a more rugged and waterproof design, wrote Mashable. They say, look closely and you'll see there's also a foldable hinge where the length of the wearable meets the glass prism. The hinge should make Google Glass easier to stow away in a pocket, where the only way to store the old one was in an included case. According to 9to5 Google, the new Glass will only be distributed to Glass for Work partners who will probably load their own software onto the device in advance. And it sounds like Google won't be selling it to consumers in any capacity, at least right now. Google did not immediately respond to, I found this in Fast Company, to their request for confirmation that the images on the FCC website were authentic. But 9to5 Google reported that, quote, sources tell us the device has been in the hands of hundreds of people across Glass for Work startups and in the field. More than one source has said that the companies are planning to officially begin adding the device to their offerings starting soon. So soon, maybe your boss will be the one that comes and tells you have to wear Google Glass, but at least it should only be in the office or at work. I think it's probably a wise move on Google's part, because handing it to a lot of companies that are going to actually use it and develop for it means that they help build the market for what it's useful to do. You know what I mean? They're going to be, obviously companies aren't going to just build this stuff for fun. No, there's no company anywhere that goes, hey, let's spend a bunch of money on this Google Glass head mounted thing just because we want our employees to look cool. That will work.
So all those telecom companies that call you, that go through the prompts to like help desk people, they can just give them this to step through all the questions and responses and all the pathing stuff. And that way they can like make the cubicle space even smaller. They can just put it in chairs right next to each other, and they'll just all have Google Glass. It'll just be this big room full of chairs with people with, you know, Google Glass for Work.
Actually, what you can do is you can steal the ideas that we've been seeing posted online, the nightmarish ideas for how to cram even more people into an airplane. You know, because they've got the things where there's all the just, you know, where the seats are stacked and all that. So you could just, you know, instead of having, you know, 10 square feet per person, you can go down to, I don't know, what's the minimum? Like probably two square feet per person.
If they're standing, yeah.
Or put them all on bar stools.
If we figure out how to liquefy people, we can really get that density down. And then just reconstitute them once they get to where they are, where they need to be.
You put them on bar stools mounted on hoverboards, so that, and then you control the hoverboards remotely with the Internet of Things, and then you can basically just sort of cram them even tighter into the warehouse of people.
That won't work until they get fire extinguishers on the Internet connect.
Oh man, it'll be like a really bad video game, because when one of those hoverboards would go up, they'd all go up. So it'd be. But so yeah, the wearable world. I'm guessing the deal is this coming year will be Internet of Things will be the big deal, and virtual reality, and then the like wearable thing. They'll be quiet about it until Apple either comes out with another watch or somebody else comes out with something that's more portable, and then it'll be back to the year of the wearable.
I'm holding out for the year of the implantable. That's coming.
I'm surprised you haven't already gotten like some magnets put in and some of that.
Wait to see how Flickr's stuff. Grinder exploits go.
Well, and now with the like the Pine computers for only $19, you just got to have a really big cavity to put it in to have a whole Linux computer.
Hey, I seem to have got my Raspberry Pi. Could you pick that up for me?
Goatsy.
I've seen that's my main issue is that the microcontrollers that I've seen people drop under the skin, one, I guess they're not getting real medical help, so most of it looks pretty ugly. The other part is that I just wouldn't want to like bump into a wall or like it just looks like it would be painful with that in there. I would want it probably embedded, in some fat or in some muscle somewhere. So I don't think we're quite there yet. And there's no compelling piece of tech that I'm ready to say like, hey, I want this in me for the next 40 years. So no, someday, but not yet.
I'm wondering if the thing, nowadays it's like all just about every young person has a tattoo. And so each generation has to figure out the thing that the previous generation is just totally disgusted that, well, I can't believe this new generation and what they do with their earrings and their tattoos. I think the next thing will be getting LEDs implanted under your skin so that it looks like a tattoo, but it'll actually like light up. And
I would still do that.
Be animated.
That would be
cool. You could play Space Invaders on your chest.
Yeah. I would never go to bed.
Oh.
You don't need a flashlight?
And some of us who have the more, I guess I'd call it the majority in-studio build, could do like 4K video on our stomachs. Not all of us, but some of us could. You could see 3D Star Wars on my gut.
This is 16:9. This is for 16
IMAX.
Or we could stand together in a group and it'd be IMAX.
Can I give the 3D glasses back out now?
Retro 70mm.
Basically, and the idea would be it would drive people to virtual reality because they wouldn't be able to stand the actual reality. I do think that would be, of course, it's so decadent, but yeah, the like LEDs under the skin where it could do the color thing would be kind of totally cyberpunk and awesome.
One of the latest Doctor Who's had a tattoo that would move.
Spoiler!
It's not saying anything like that. It's just saying moving tattoo. That's kind of cool. Like E.
La 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 la.
Weeping angels.
The weeping tattoo, it would only move when you weren't looking at it.
I misspelled my tattoo and now it's on the internet.
I was told I could keep my favorite doctor. Thanks, Obama.
You got to wait till they do the next changeover in Doctor Who, whenever that
Spoiler!
Happens.
Spoiler!
Was there a Christmas Doctor Who?
No, I'm saying...
I'm kidding. I'm just being fair. I'm not caught up.
I just didn't want anybody to think that there'd been a regeneration started in the latest Christmas special or something. I think the latest one...
Well, didn't the latest...
River Song or something.
The latest Doctor that we have... The Doctor that we have right now manifested during Obamacare.
Oh, so did they have I didn't see that meme. Didn't get to me at that time.
Oh yeah,
they said I could keep my doctor.
They said I could keep my doctor, and he changed. Thanks, Obama. No, there was a Christmas special. I'm not quite caught up now. In the nerding of Cynthia, we started at the first Eccleston mm-hmm. episode, and have been working our way all the way through it. So we are in the current season now,
okay.
But we are about 5 episodes back. So the Christmas, we watched the Christmas special when it happened last year because we were in London and we had to be ready.
Seemed very appropriate.
We needed to be on guard in case, Cybermen, Daleks or whatever.
Attacking Christmas trees, what have you.
Cynthia had a Satsuma orange just in case. we were prepared. But no, I haven't seen it this year yet.
Yeah, nor have I.
It's recorded. It's waiting. It's waiting, but, you know.
Waiting for what? There's the question.
Waiting for us to get to a Doctor
Who. To binge enough.
But no, we have, now we're just, it's one Doctor Who a week, but we're just slightly out of sync. You know, in the off, you know, we got caught up every season during the off season. We would watch while everybody else was waiting for new ones to come out. We were still getting caught up. And then over the last 3 or 4 years, we got caught up. We don't binge watch, but we watch one a week.
No, that's cool.
Yeah.
The Doctor Who stuff is the one show I don't binge watch, just because I'm always so upset because it's gone forever. It's like it'll take like a year hiatus or a year and a half hiatus.
Yeah.
I don't think Doctor Who's binge watchable.
It's kind of dense, and some of those things I'd actually like to go back and watch some of, because I'll have some on the background, and I know I've missed key, large, huge plot points that, you know.
They're on all the ones from the reboot, basically, to now, except for the current season, are all on Netflix. And frankly, if you started now, you know, it'd take you a while, even when they're even doing their long hiatuses, to catch up.
Well, that's what we did. We started with episode one, the first of the reboots, and just watched one, maybe two a week.
It's funny how it changes your perception, how your perception of him changes. Because I remembered that when they did that, he seemed kind of harsh and not a happy guy, you know, kind of angry. And you watch him, and no, he's pretty, what's the actor? Because he's kind of intense.
The latest one?
No,
Eccleston, yeah, when they first did the reboot,
I liked him. He was.
And then you watch him; he's kind of mischievous, and he's kind of mischievous and funny and smiling a lot in it, which that wasn't what my memory was from watching him in the first place. But anyways, looking for things to binge watch, I was looking around on Hulu, and they've got a bunch of BBC stuff, and the thing that's ironic to me is some of these shows, and I'm trying to remember, some of these old British shows, the BBC ones, have been on forever. I mean, longer than Doctor Who. Now I'm going to forget what it's called, but one of them, you know, you look at it and it says, you know, you could watch the latest season, and it's like season 53. which of course, the thing that I did, you know, when I saw one that said that, I'm going to go back and see how many seasons do they actually have on the system, and they never go back that far. It's never they've never digitized that many of them, but there's these shows that have been on for 30 or 40 years and, you know, have that many seasons of them, which it's never the one that just like blows you away that you can't wait to watch more of. It's always the ones that yeah, maybe. I guess they're kind of soap opera-y.
Doctor Who could almost fall into that category. I want to say, like, the first episodes came out, like, early 60s, 63, somewhere in there. Now, they're not what I would call watchable, all of them, but they're definitely out there.
UnDrive.
UnDrive. Don't forget to go to kpft.org and make a donation.
Give us your monies.
It's the last opportunity you have for Technology Bites this year.
Save the station.
Save the station. Save yourselves.
Hack the planet.
It's the FunDrive reboot. Go for the cool, gritty new reboot on the UnDrive.
UnDrive. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to Technology Bites. And I know it's corny.
No Geek Gathering. Next week.
It'll be next week. Week for Friday. The post is up on geekradio.com, and the Facebook invite is available. And even though it's corny, we'll see you next year. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Garrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Wake up, Groovehouse.
Hi, this is Hank Lamb, host of The Prison Show on 90.1 FM and Electro Love Radio Show on HD3 at kpft.org. please take the time to go to kpft.org and click Donate Now. Or you can simply go to the tip jar and make a donation to the program on the air. Your pledge there supports the main station in Houston supporting live local music and playing it on the air. KPFT also plays the best of talk and informational programming where you can get alternative views and news. I hope you'll take the time to make a pledge online at kpft.org or call 713-526-4000 to make your pledge. Thank you for supporting live music, a variety of views on issues, and KPFT, your community radio station for over 45 years. Thank you for keeping free speech alive.
KPFT, Houston.
Many of us know someone looking to sell or just get rid of an old car, truck, RV, or motorcycle. It may be just taking up room in the garage or driveway. Sometimes the cost of the repair just doesn't make a sale even worth it. And as we all look for tax deductions at the end of the year, you may want to consider donating that unwanted vehicle, running or not. KPFT can have the vehicle towed away at no charge to you. The owner, you get a tax receipt for deductions at the end of the year, a KPFT membership, and the satisfaction of knowing that old vehicle went to a good cause. It's a win all the way around. So just call toll-free 1-855-KPFT-CAR. That's 1-855-573-8227. No matter if it's car, truck, scooter, farm equipment, just about any kind of vehicle, we can take care of it. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR now. Or visit kpft.org. This is 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, kpft.org online.